the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Reserved these powers are to the states respectively or to the people. These are the words, my fellow Americans, of the 10th Amendment to our beloved Constitution of the United States. What the 10th Amendment, and in fact the Constitution generally proposes, is the delegation of certain rights and powers only to the federal government. But only certain rights and powers. Limiting those powers, making them specific, and as a result, restricting the federal government from usurping any additional rights or powers, those especially which are expressly granted to or reserved for the states or for we, the people. Hands off federal government and allow the states, then 13 of them and now 50, allow them and the people therein to exercise their rights, to enumerate their powers within their borders, and develop lifestyles and approaches to issues and problems as they, the states, see fit, so says the Constitution. But the federal government, including House, Senate, President, and the judiciary, have functioned, especially in recent years, exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. Not only has the federal government usurped powers never intended by the Constitution or the Founding Fathers, but there is now an ongoing contest between the branches of government, which creates in so many ways an imbalance of powers and the exercise thereof in unconstitutional ways, Mr. Obama. The most notable imbalance occurs with the presidency. The first Bush, then Clinton, then the second Bush, and then especially Obama, and now Trump, continue the growth of the presidency and oftentimes, think many, the exercise of unilateral authority through presidential orders and vetoes to accomplish policy objectives. The Constitution never intended the presidency to be so powerful, never, or to operate in such a unilateral fashion, nor the Congress, House, and Senate to be so inactive, even indifferent and so divided. We have what many call a do-nothing Congress, and certainly not the judiciary, certainly not our justices to be so activist and involved as the judicial system is today. The Founding Fathers and the Constitution never, ever intended that. Many of the issues that recent presidents have tried to decide at the national level through executive orders are best resolved at the state or local levels, so many think, and so does the Constitution. In this era of fierce partisan divisions, all sides are beginning to see the virtues of our federal system, accommodating differences and encouraging experimentation on issues such as immigration and law enforcement and education at the state levels. The exercise of that constitutional authority and rights which are granted by the Constitution to the states can produce state solutions and resolutions to problems and issues, different from the federal government, and promoting diversity, isn't that the key word today, and creative thinking, and problem solving for the benefit of the states and the people, and preventing the continued encroachment of the federal government. Boy, is it ever. Remember again, my fellow Americans, the 10th Amendment protects states' rights and it prohibits federal actions that commandeer state and local officials and legislative action taken. You can't do it, Uncle Sam. You can't do it. The Founding Fathers did indeed intend to allow the states and local governments to pursue a range of different policies or matters within what used to be called their police power. That is, the authority of the states to regulate behavior, maintain order, and promote the public good within their own territory. The framers of the Constitution considered federalism, that's what that's all about, the very best way to protect liberty and diversity of opinion, as well as to defend political minorities from national tyranny and concentrated federal power. Boy, that makes sense to me. What do you think about that? But in the pre-Constitution days and weeks, the debate raged among the framers as to what form the division of powers would take. Alexander Hamilton, brilliant statesman, passionately urged the national government to assume more powers and to assert them aggressively against the states. On the other hand, Thomas Jefferson and his close ally James Madison resisted this centralizing impulse, pointing to the rights reserved to the states under the 10th Amendment and the limits on congressional, presidential, and judicial power. That debate, Hamiltonian and Jeffersonian, that debate regarding expanded or restricted federal power continues today. So-called Hamiltonians on the one hand and Jeffersonians on the other exist in every party and every state, and even among we the people. So what is your position about the power, influence, and decision-making of the federal government? Do you agree with the Constitution? Brilliant Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis was a most proud Jeffersonian. Brandeis praised the states as laboratories of democracy. He stated, "It is one of the happy incidents of the federal system that a single courageous state may, if its citizens so choose, serve as a laboratory and try novel social and economic experiments without risk to the rest of the country." Justice Louis Brandeis. In short, states, do your own business within your own borders, the federal government notwithstanding. Get on with it and do it. Protect your borders. Former Chief Justice Taft of the United States Supreme Court stated the following: "The diffusion of power between the national and state governments serves to defend us all against the danger of sudden gusts of popular passion." I love that. Let me read that to you again. "The diffusion of power between the national and state governments serves to defend us all against the danger of sudden gusts of popular passion." Right on, Mr. Taft. I agree. Do you? Other states would be impressed with such experiments and follow suit if they agreed or observe the failures and dangers and move in different directions. But the bottom line, said Chief Justice Taft, would force the federal government to make better choices, observing and influenced by the diversity of opinion in state governments and learning from them. The federal government learning from anybody or anything else? Well, that's what federalism and the Constitution are all about. President Ronald Reagan, the great orator, was supposedly a supporter of a Jeffersonian approach and states' rights, and even more so, rights reserved for the people. "Get," Reagan famously said, "get government off people's backs. Let them live. Let the economy run free market, and let the states counteract the federal government." But at the same time, Reagan was a forceful president, issuing executive orders and otherwise utilizing the powers of the presidency to get things done. A little bit of hypocrisy there, maybe? Perhaps Reagan set the tone for the succeeding five presidents and showed them, even encouraged them, to utilize presidential powers aggressively, and especially so Obama. Boy, did he ever. You know, the guy with the pen and the phone? All such presidents have tended to amass federal power and use it, rather than to devolve it, that is, to pass it down and spread it out where the power should rightfully and constitutionally be exercised. At the same time, opposition parties have always defended states' rights as a way of protecting dissent and their own policy agendas to counteract the federal government, and especially the presidency. Federalism was the antidote, especially to a president issuing executive orders to implement policies which those presidents cannot persuade Congress to enact. "If Congress won't do it, then I, the president," said Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump, "then I will do it through executive orders." The states, the opposition parties believed, were political enclaves which could resist and challenge the president, or the Congress, or even the federal judiciary. Boy, those are pretty powerful statements, don't you think? Many believe that the critical issue of immigration is a federal matter only, and should be handled by the federal government only, not the states. But there are many who believe that immigration policies can and should be made at the local state level, even if some border states, for example, might stress enforcement, while other states would adopt more permissive immigration or illegal immigration policies, like sanctuary cities in a state. An example would be California. California legislation enacted in the year 2013, which in essence constrained police in the state from cooperating with federal immigration agents. How about that one? California standing up to the old feds. Such legislation in California set precedent followed by other states. Some few states have really begun their own movements to resist the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. That's federalism at work. On the other hand, in a decision decided by the United States Supreme Court, the former great Justice Antonin Scalia, boy he sure was, wrote the following. What most would consider the defining characteristic of sovereignty, the power to exclude from the sovereign's territory people who have no right to be there, would in fact be null and void if there was only one federal policy which applied to all states. Let Arizona, Scalia was saying, in effect, let Arizona do what's right for Arizonians, and Texas for Texans, and California for Californians. So thought Scalia, and really many others with him. Sounds a little bit chaotic, doesn't it? But that's what federalism is all about. Jeffersonian at the core, states' rights at work. In fact, some states are actively pursuing immigrants to come. Come to our states, live and work in their states, unlike Arizona or Texas. Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan, a Republican, supports a proposal which would attract some 50,000 highly skilled immigrants to Detroit. Detroit. There is work to be done in that city, and it's not being done. And there is work to be done to rebuild Detroit, says Snyder. Congresspersons in Ohio and Wisconsin advocate the very same policy, proclaiming that states should be able to hand out thousands of guest worker visas to those, including immigrants, whom they think most worthy. Perhaps they follow Scalia, who encourages the states to do what is right for them with regard to immigration within their very own borders. Potentially 50 different policies or approach to the issues of the day. Do you agree with that? Does that sound chaotic to you? Or does that sound right, federalistic, and constitutional to you? Recently, Attorney General Jeff Sessions ordered federal prosecutors to pursue the toughest possible sentences, even for low-level drug crimes. That is so with regard to federal crimes only. But such a policy, contrary to California and other Democratic states, could well do harm to ongoing experimentation at the local and state levels to determine policies better suited to the circumstances of that state and that particular part of the country and its economy. Such a policy, a Sessions policy, in short, would be harmful to the concept of federalism. So it goes. Attorney General Sessions has gone even farther with respect to local police and police departments. The federal government has monitored certain police departments where there have been rising racial tensions and an increase in violence and murders. Sessions announced that the federal government will back away from the Obama administration's strategy of monitoring and involvement in police department affairs. Sessions claims that federal involvement exacerbates the problems, and the Attorney General believes that the withdrawing of federal oversight could help to shape a new consensus and new opportunities for relationship between the police departments and the citizenry. Police departments, says Sessions, need the autonomy. They need the autonomy to build trust in their own communities, while at the same time being held to rigorous standards of accountability by local and state authorities, in other words, not the federal government. Policing has always been state rather than federal responsibility. It really has, especially at the beginning. The most innovative new strategies in law enforcement have come from localities dealing with practical problems on the ground. Local police departments operate in many different ways to enforce law and order and to strike the right balance between privacy and public safety. They are far more capable of doing so, says Sessions, than the federal government or any of its agencies. Do you agree? Obama sure didn't agree. Eric Holder sure didn't agree. Loretta Lynch sure didn't agree. But this is the policy of Trump and Sessions. Get the federal government off people's backs and out of the police department and let the states and the local communities run their business with strict accountability. Do you agree? Such an area has been traditionally left to the states anyway, left to them to decide and prioritize and implement. The Trump administration has struck a blow for federalism by launching a review of Obama-era regulations and guidance for school districts, for example, for the end purpose of deregulating and once again empowering the states with respect to local education. Boy, that sounds good to me. How about you? Do you agree with that? Trump's executive order directs Education Secretary Betsy DeVos to modify or repeal measures that she considers to be federal overreach. Would that include Common Core, I do hope? Trump wants, through the Secretary of Education, to repeal measures that he and she think to be federal overreach. Boy, I bet that's good news to states and local communities. Trump said the following: "For too long, the government has imposed its will on state and local governments." Amen to that. "The result has been education that spends more and achieves far, far, far less." I kind of agree with that. Do you? If in fact such deregulation occurs, then states will once again assume their rightful position to decide the educational principles for their citizens. Sounds good to me. Former Governor Jeb Bush of Florida agrees. Echoing Jeffersonian sentiment, Bush stated the following: "The state laboratories of government should have ample chance to innovate with scores of new ideas and policies to spark economic growth and improve education, to lift people out of poverty," amen to that, "and lift up the middle class." I'm good with that too, are you? State control of education would be critical in implementing those goals. Perhaps a more controversial aspect of education policy is the recent debate over bathroom policies for transgender students. For some reason, neither President Obama nor President Trump has been able to motivate Congress to deal with this issue. Why not? What is the matter with our Congress? Because of such congressional inaction, both Trump and Obama have attempted to fill the void through executive orders. In fact, as with all issues national or local, if Congress abnegates authority and responsibility, a president would have no other choice but to decide and exercise through executive orders what he thinks is right for the country at large. With President Trump especially, many believe his executive orders would favor federalism and the states over the federal government, and they encourage him to act accordingly. Do you agree? Eventually, all such matters, if there is serious conflict, would be decided by the United States Supreme Court. That court, now fully constituted with 9 justices, may indeed return more power and prerogatives to the states, as the constitutional principle of federalism would have it. I, for one, hope they do. The court may decide to keep social issues local and avoiding, as one scholar stated, a war of all against all. Boy, don't we have that in our country today? We are so antagonistic, inimical to each other. There is no dialogue. There really is a war of all against all. It seems true that a rich diversity of preferred lifestyles can only be achieved at the local state level. Elevating such issues to the national level for decision and uniformity may well be a recipe for more contentious, bitter attitude and debate, and with the continuation of perhaps the greatest problem in America today, gridlock. Gridlock. We just can't get things done. The end result is that for the good of America and its citizens, federalism and state autonomy must be revived and respected. That seems the only real way that all sides can peacefully coexist in today's political environment. Our society is so diverse in so many ways, and so bitter, and so contentious, and divided, that uniform policies, whatever they are in fact doomed to failure in so many parts of our country. Federalism seems to be the only way that all peoples can peacefully coexist in today's political environment. There is political dysfunction everywhere, and especially on Capitol Hill. There is in so many ways an inactive do-nothing Congress to the chagrin of everyone. And now there comes an even more activist federal court system. They are determined to fill the policy voids if they possibly can. ready to strike down the unilateral actions of presidents and otherwise directly or indirectly making policy, finding at every viable turn new constitutional rights never intended by our forefathers and not in the Constitution itself. We live in a day and age of rabid polarization, my fellow Americans. We strongly disagree with each other, and in most such areas, there is no compromise, and there even is no dialogue, and the divisiveness and bitterness only grows. We are eating away, eroding our very own freedoms, active if unknowing participants in the erosion of our Constitution and its precious rights. We are indeed, America is, a house divided, really divided. And as we know, a house divided cannot stand. Federalism, states' rights, 10th Amendment powers establish 50 political entities and enclaves which can experiment, form policies and priorities, and otherwise develop lifestyles for their citizens, right for them, no matter what other states do. No longer would it be a matter of winner-take-all, but rather American citizens exercising their freedoms within their own state borders. Critics, of course, think that would create absolute chaos, political chaos, chaos nationally. But federalism, as a viable political concept, has never really been tried, and I think it should be. It is now no longer conceptual, but actual and factual. It is at work, federalism is, and there are federalistic states in the lead, championing federalism, including California, and Texas, and Arizona, and Ohio, and Michigan, just to name some, with others sure to follow. Such state action breaks gridlock, and it moves policy decisions forward, and it allows citizens to live within their very own borders with certainty, knowing the rules, knowing the laws, and not having to worry about change, constant judicial, federal, presidential, congressional change, controlling their very own lives. That's what our forefathers intended, and that's what the Constitution says. Right or wrong, that's the way it is. It is the 10th Amendment of the Constitution at work. Read it. Read it again and again, my fellow Americans. It is the law of the land. It is, says the forefathers, what America should be. It is what is right for the people. It complements the 9th Amendment about the people. And for the states, the 10th Amendment is the constitutional way to live. Hear the words of the 10th Amendment one more time. The powers not delegated to the United States, that's the federal government, by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Do you agree?